Before we start, just generate correct motivation. Yeah, this correct motivation if needed. All right, so we talked about the 12 links, different types of karma. We talked about propelling karma or throwing karma in relation with the 12 links, right? And we talked about completion karma. We had the possibilities of good throwing karma and good completion karma, right? For a person born like the Buddha or like a human being born in kind of very good conditions in life, right? With a lot of kind of, you know, right conditions, no, not too much suffering of sickness or whatsoever, you know, that's kind of comfortable life, so to say. So there's good throwing karma as a human being and good completion karma, right? And we also saw there's a possibility of good having good throwing karma, but not good completion karma. For human beings born in war zones with, you know, with not enough food or, you know, kind of sicknesses and different things. So that's good throwing karma, but negative completion karma, right? And we had a dog being born in a, you know, wealthy family and being treated even better than an average human being on this planet, you know, so it means bad throwing karma but good completion karma, right? Or a dog in the streets somewhere in India, in the city somewhere, you know, there's a negative throwing karma and negative completion karma, yeah? Then also on an answer to the question of my friend from Malaysia, was like, we had also karma and experiencing according to similar to the cause, right? The accident, for example, you have, you know, sometimes, or sickness, right? So you experience, there's a kind of experience which is created by a cause, right? It's kind of completion karma is a general aspect. Throwing karma is a particular life. Completion karma is a general aspect of that life. And then within the general aspect, there's different other small aspects, yeah? Yeah? So those are also created by different kind of karmas, right? So that means in that context we have experience according to the cause. Meaning, you know, like smog, for example, if you have those four factors, right, of we talked about, like the basis, the intention, where there's three, right? We had discriminating factor, motivation and affliction, right? With the positive karma. With the negative karma was discrimination, motivation and ignorance, for example, right? Yeah. So that's the second one, and then the third one is the act, and the fourth one is the final step, right? So that means if all those four are complete, and it's kind of a powerful potential, it has a potential to throw you somewhere, right? If one of them are missing, then it doesn't have the potential to throw you in another rebirth, but it can be kind of completion karma, right? But if two or three are missing, it's smaller, right? You see that? So then there are little things in life. Yeah. So karma is very complex. It's not that one karma creates life together with all its experience included. It's very complex. Causes and conditions are, you know, momentary. We create kind of activity, right? So it's very complex. Yeah. So that means that we have these kind of terms which says, the kind of, you know, like when I was born as a human being, it's kind of, you know, good karma to be born as a human being. Then reasonably okay youth, you know. Because some people think, oh, you became a monk, you must be so depressed when you were young. You know, some people think like that. But actually it was not the case, you know. And so I was quite a happy university student. But I just had my questions, right, about life. And that's why I decided to study a bit more, you know. So. But that means that there's a good throwing karma and some good completion karma, right? But then I had the accident. You know, I died twice. I didn't die, but almost died in a car accident once and in the sea in Spain. So almost dying, but didn't die, luckily. But that's also negative karma, right? Well, when I was knocked on the street. It was like a little bit unconscious, and what's happening? You know, that's also negative karma, right? So that's kind of an experience according to the cause, right? So that means in a previous lifetime that's something and that causes this to happen, right? Yeah, or positive things. Some happiness there, drinking a nice cup of coffee somewhere, and some happiness. So that's also kind of created previously, right? Nothing is without cause and conditions. You see, so that's a kind of experience in accordance with a cause. Yeah. So everything that actually is related with happiness or suffering is a result of a previous cause, right? Yeah. You see that? So that's an experience according to the cause. So then it's also an act according to the cause. Habituation patterns. You know, so there's a possibility, let's say, young children, without being taught, some like to save insects and others like to kill them. Where does that come from? Right? So some people have this capacity to not only is intelligence is one aspect, but the capacity to know things very quickly in a particular field of science or philosophy, or, you know, there can be inclinations of previous lifetimes, right? Like Mozart, for example, you know, being such incredible capacity to compose things at a very young age, right? So that maybe, you know, so there are possibilities of habituation patterns, you know, and we see in the monastery sometimes that some of the tukus of the incarnated lamas, they just, you know, they don't have to put that much effort, and they can, you know, I think it was one of the previous Lingwa Rinpoches who just memorized the names of Manjushri. It's a very difficult text to memorize, though. You know, there's a kind of chanting the names of Manjushri. Very tapo, mean very kind of, very condensed in Tibetan. It's very, even just to read it is not easy. You know, so to memorize that takes time, yeah? So it's about, what is it, 20 folios, something like that, you know? So that takes time. So when he was being told by his teacher, in 2-3 weeks' time you have your exam, you have to give this, you have to memorize from memory. And he didn't memorize for 10 days, and then the day before the exam, just read it once and got it. So that's a sign that, you know, things are, that's a sign that, yeah, there's some inclinations, right? So that's what Ganatri Rinpoche always says. You know, you study well, you put things into practice, you do that for a few lifetimes, and then things start to happen. Right, and that's probably true. That's the fate in based on this habituation, right? The more you do, the easier it becomes. And that's true, because when I talked about discussed the biography of Lobsang Tenzin, who was like an uneducated person in Tibet fighting the Chinese, right? No interest in Buddhism at all, but going against the Chinese, preserving Tibetan culture. Then he was not educated, he came to India, escaped, because they killed a person, right? So he killed a Chinese official, came to India, the Tibetans in India thought he was a Chinese spy, so again he had a difficulty. He had so much suffering in his life. And then he started into Buddhism, only after that. And he has to first know how to read and write Tibetan, you know? So then he started only probably in his late 20s, I think. And then he went, generated some kind of renunciation, and went up in the mountains, became a monk, and stayed for long, many years in retreat. And he produced all his realizations, you know. Then His Holiness sent him to Europe, or not Europe, to the US, for scientific research, you know, on his kind of experience of meditation. And yeah, there's some incredible things they found. But he wrote himself in a very short biography, very honest, you know, not I did this, I did that, not like that at all, just very honest. He said probably there are some imprints, because otherwise it cannot happen that quickly. Get these realizations, you know, like the realization of Vajrayana, he just got very quickly. So he said himself, that's probably a sign of imprints or previous inclinations, right? Habituation patterns. Yeah. So that's also in Stevenson research, children remembering previous lifetimes. If you study the case studies, then you see habituations of previous personalities, they carry on in the next life. Very interesting. From Buddhist perspective, it's very interesting, you know, because then you know, the more we habituate ourselves to something positive, not only in this life, there will be kind of patterns, you know, that propels itself, but also in future lifetimes, right? So that's a bonus kind of thing. And that also gives you a lot of faith, because then you go in a particular direction, and then you don't have to be afraid at a time of death, because you generate a positive state of mind, and we'll go, you know? So so there's many lamas, or Genlam Rinpa, who stayed in retreat. The Genlam Rinpa, who did a lot of samatha meditation in the US. So when he passed away, he said, oh, don't need to do too many prayers. Just one pure monk recites the the prayer to be born in Amitabha. Not that he wanted to be born in Amitabha's pure land, but it's a very powerful prayer, you know, to get all these kind of realizations of the different types of wisdom, etc., etc., etc. He said, I only need one monk to do that. That's enough. Don't do all kind of organizing pujas with many or so. Only one. So he has so much faith in kind of, there's no need to do too much because, you know, they're comfortable by what they've done, right? So then automatically they will move in future lifetime. So that's this kind of action in accordance with the cause, right? So that's a kind of habituation. So then you see, if you move in this habituation pattern, then the negative inclinations depurify and the positive kind of habituations increase, then you can see there's a way up, right? Yeah. And then on top of that, if you then apply the antidotes to the afflictions, right? And think about emptiness a little bit, you get more and more imprints of these stages of the path to enlightenment. Right? So, and the more you reflect on about the different stages of the path to enlightenment or the lam rim, then you put imprints in the mind, and one day it goes, you know? Yeah. So that's why there's so much emphasis on studying things again and again and listening to things again and again. You know, then all those seeds are planted and one day they will ripen. Right? So that's why if you see the amount of scholars who just go again and again to receive teachings and transmissions because they put more seeds, you know? And then it becomes easier because the more seeds are planted, the bigger the harvest, right? So that's, it's very interesting to see. So that's, these are the two aspects of karma, yeah? Right? The experience according to the cause and the act according to the cause, right? So that's two other aspects. So you can see if every act we do, to which extent this basis intention with the three of discrimination, motivation, and affliction, right? And then the act, and then the conclusion. You know, so how stronger each and every of those factors are, how stronger the karma becomes. Especially motivation, we saw, is very important. And at the time of completion, the dedication, right? So if you do something negative, right, for the act of killing, and there's regret, you know, in the Vinaya scriptures, the scriptures of morality, it explains this process so detailed. Like the motivation should be uninterrupted. That means from the beginning of the act until the conclusion of the act, if the motivation is interrupted, then the karma is not that heavy. Right? So that means, for example, in the act of killing, halfway through the process you start to regret it, and then the person dies. Right? So that means that the act of killing, from that point of view, from the point of view of the motivation being uninterrupted, is not as complete as you have the motivation until the final step. You see that? So then this motivation is so important. Also with positive deeds, same thing. If we set a good motivation and we keep that motivation until, or the awareness, so we talked about the motivation at the time of the cause, right? So before we start an act, we motivate ourselves. But then it's also important to have the same motivation at the time of the act, and to keep that intention until the completion of it, you know? If you do that with positive karma, then it becomes perfect. You know, then the more, if you do virtue, which is by itself quite rare and difficult, but if you do it, make sure also, even the smallest one, make sure it's complete. Motivation, intention, you know, all these factors. Then, but we saw that karma is definite, right? The first thing of karma, and the power of increase, then those first aspects of karma becomes strong, right? So that's why intention is so important from this point of view. So if you have the motivation all the way up to the completion, then it becomes, like if you see Lama Zopa Rinpoche, for example, just switching on the lights in a hotel room, it's like a perfect act. Rinpoche motivates, switch on the light, by switching on this light may all sentient beings, may eliminate them from their suffering of ignorance. Switch on light again, make dedication. It's like, if you act in that way, then everything you do becomes a complete kind of positive thing, right? Yeah, so it's very amazing. Then you can see that every act, motivation, you know, discrimination, all the factors complete, and dedication. Then it's a kind of packages, you know? So the more of those packages you have, the more presence you receive in the future, right? So that means the more cause for happiness. Right. Yeah, so that's an important thing of karma to be understood, that the more powerful the intention is, and then the dedication, of course, because if we dedicate to a bigger goal, then all that storage of merit will go to that direction, right? So that's why we put a lot of emphasis on dedication. And we saw before there's a difference between a prayer and a dedication, right? A prayer is just like, may I become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings, right? May I was empty from its own sight. If you think it that way, then it's even more. Also, when we take refuge, when we say, I take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha, by the merit I create, by the two accumulations is a better translation, is a better way to do it, may I achieve the state of enlightenment, right? So, by generosity and etc., sometimes by the act of giving, etc., we say, or by the power of the two accumulations, because we need method and wisdom, right? So most of our positive karma we do is the accumulation of method, right? Like being kind, being a good human being. But the wisdom aspect, if you take that, if you take emptiness into account, you also get this accumulation of wisdom, right? Yeah, so that's why accumulation of merit and accumulation of wisdom, both we need, right? The two wings of the bird, or two wings of the plane flying to the city of liberation. Yeah, so that means we need both, you know? So then when you dedicate, and dedication and prayer, there's a difference, because a prayer is, may I become a Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings, while a dedication is dedicating something in a particular direction. Right? So by the power of my virtuous deed of talking about these things or contemplating these things or being kind to a person or listening to a person, right? There's a kind of root of virtue. So by the power of having done this good deed, may that ripen in this result. That's the dedication, right? So it's not just a prayer of may I become a Buddha or may I achieve precious rebirth, may I achieve liberation. No, by the power of having contemplated the 12 links, may I become Buddha for the benefit of sentient beings. That's a dedication. And by the power of a root of virtue, may this come about. You see? So a dedication, if you debate, then you say, how many possibilities between dedication and prayer? Yeah? So they're not opposite, right? There's a common locus, meaning there's something that is both, there's something that is neither, and there's something that is one and the other, and something that is the other and another one. That's how you debate these things, right? So a dedication is a prayer. So this is basically, we say there's three possibilities. Whatever is a dedication is a prayer. But whatever a prayer is not a dedication. Like, for example, may I become Buddha for the benefit of all sentient beings. It's a prayer, but it's not a dedication, because it doesn't dedicate a root of virtue to that purpose. You see that? Yeah, so by having contemplated this today, by that root of virtue, may I become a Buddha. That's a prayer as well as a dedication. You see that? Yeah? And there's something that is neither, like the table. You know? So you can that's a kind of way to make clear what is a prayer and what is a dedication and what is something that is neither of two. You know, to get clear, you know, what is a prayer and what is a dedication? So whatever is a dedication is necessarily a prayer, but whatever is a prayer is not necessarily a dedication. You see that? Yeah? So that's kind of a way of pervasions and possibilities that gives us very much clarity about different things, right? So with karma, same thing. Among the 12 links, if I debate you, whatever is one of the 12 links, is it necessarily an affliction? What do you say? We talked about, right? What did you say? 1, 8, 9, affliction, right? Right? 2 and 10, karma. Rest 7, suffering. Yeah, that comes from Nagarjuna's, Nagarjuna's precious garland, I think, the quotation of this division, right? So I have to say again, whatever is one of the 12 links, is it necessarily an affliction? Then you say, no. Right? For example, yeah, because if you say no, you have to put it, you have to put something that is neither or, it's not an affliction, but it's one of the 12 links, right?
Birth.
Huh? Birth, yeah. Birth is not an affliction, right? Why? Yeah, suffering, very good. Yeah, among the threefold division, it's suffering, right? Yeah, the threefold division of this 12, because there's a lot of things, sneaky tricks, Yeah. So that means that whatever is one of the 12 links is not necessarily an affliction. For example, birth, which is suffering, or karmic formation number 2, which is karma, is not an affliction, right? You see that? Yeah, so if you think in that way, it becomes very clear, you know? So that's why the structure of debate or the structure of analyzing things is a very powerful tool to give clarity, you know? So how do you define suffering? How do you define karma? How do you define suffering, right? So we talked about that threefold division according to the Nagarjuna's precious garland, right? I think it's that quotation. I think so, yeah. So, yeah, so 1, 8, and 9 is the affliction, and then 2 and 10 is the karma, and the remaining 7, nature of suffering, yeah? Yeah, so that is in relation with suffering and the cause of suffering, right? So that's in relation with those two. Because the 12 links, among the Four Noble Truths, the 12 links explain, from the point of view of sequence, from 1 till 12, explain how we enter. Juk is not really enter because we already entered, but it's kind of how we go around in samsara, right? That's the first two truths of the Buddha, the first teaching, right? The true suffering and the true cause of suffering, right? So the 12 links explains that process. If you follow the 12 links in sequence from 1 to 12, yeah? If you study the 12 links in reverse order, not from 12 to 1, but from the point of view, if one is not there, the other will not arise, right? Yeah, so the same thing, the Buddha showed the example of a seed in the Seedlings Sutra, that this actually comes from that sutra, that the Buddha had the seed and said, look, you put there, and there's heat, moisture, fertilization, it will grow into a sprout, right? So from the point of the seed with the right conditions, it will grow. But if you take away the seed, then there's no sprout, right? So from that point of view, the Buddha explained the 12 links of dependent origination. Yeah? So from the point of view of cause and effect relationships from 1 to 12, yeah, though it doesn't follow that sequence, as we saw, right? First is the first three, then we go to the time of death, and then it's craving, grasping, and becoming, right? And then the next life comes. So the 12 links, if they have to be completed, yeah, my next question to you. Are the 12 links completed in 1, 2, or 3 lifetimes? Or any other number? All this kind of meaning, the karmic links, 12 links, of one particular karma, right? One particular act we're talking about, right? So if you have the act of killing, you know, then all the different chains in relation with that particular karma, does it ripen in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, or whatever lifetimes? What do you think?
Definitely not 1.
Definitely very good. Yeah. Very good answer. Definitely not 1. So, does it pervade to be in what's created in this life ripens necessarily in the next life? Does that pervade or not? No, right? It doesn't pervade. So, it's either 2 or more. Yeah, because the first three in this life, for example, right? So if it's 2 lifetimes, the first three in this life, right? Right? Ignorance, karmic formation, consciousness, this life. Yeah. Then craving, grasping, and becoming, this life, at the time of death. Then the next life, you know, the form, because a name and form, sense, the sources, contact and feeling, and of course, birth, sickness, aging, and death. Yeah. So that's within 2 lifetimes, right? So within, if it can also happen, you create the first 3 in this life, and that particular karma doesn't ripen at the time of death, but some other karma from previous lifetime ripens. So then one of the future lifetimes, it ripens, right, at time of death. You see that? And then the life after that, it propels you. So that's 3 lifetimes. Yeah. So either in 2 lifetimes or in 3. You see that? And in between those lifetimes of the creation and the ripening, there can be many lifetimes. You see that? So you create the first 3 in this life, then a few lifetimes it doesn't ripen, and then at the time of death it ripens with these 3 factors, and then the one after that directly. So when, the grieving, grasping, and becoming, If that happens at a time of death, then that propels you in the next lifetime, right? So then that's kind of two lifetimes, and then the first three are greater than the previous one. So that's three lifetimes. You see that? So it has to be ripen either in two or three. Yeah? But then in between, there can be many lifetimes. You see that? Yeah? So that's also important to know. So that's with this throwing karma, right? So that's either because one you create in one lifetime and then it ripens in this or another lifetime, and in between there can be many. Right? So it doesn't pervade. So what ripens at the time of death is mostly that what is the strongest karma, or next level is most, you habituate yourself most to it, right? That ripens first. Yeah, so that means the stronger our habituation, the easier it becomes for that to ripen at time of death. Yeah? So that's why habituation is so important. Yeah? A positive one. Right? So yeah. So then that's another thing to know, that how it actually propels in different types of birth, yeah, or different lifetimes. That's yeah, another thing I was trying to talk about. So yeah, so that we also have to know one chain of the 12 links. Yeah, so to go back to the Buddha's example of the Seedling Sutra, so he said, okay, from the point of view of the sequence, yeah, as we saw, it's not exactly from 1 to 12. Yeah, it's from 1 to 3, then it goes at a time of death, right? With graving and grasping and becoming, and then we have name and form and birth and sickness, aging and death, right? You see that? So it's not exactly the sequence. You see that? That's also a thing to be understood, you know? Then another thing is that that's from the point of view of the first two noble truths, the truth of suffering and the true cause of suffering, right? Because the true cause of suffering is this ignorance, right? And this kind of karma and afflictions, right? That causes, you know, the suffering to happen. Yeah, because there's seven in relation with suffering, two in relation with karma and afflictions, right? So karma and afflictions are the cause of suffering, as we saw. Yeah. And the truth of suffering is seven in number. Yeah? So then you relate it with the Four Noble Truths. Yeah, you can relate these 12 links with the Four Noble Truths. So that's from the point of view of starting with number one and going in cause and effect relationship. Yeah. So then from the point of view of the two truths, of the true cessation and the two parts, then you also can explain the 12 links, right? And then it comes in kind of a reverse aspect. Because if you have a true part, meaning if you have a mind directly perceiving emptiness, then there's no ignorance. And when that mind is realizing emptiness, right? At that time, ignorance is not manifest. The adherence at innate inherent existence is not present, because only emptiness appears to the mind, right? So the moment that person comes out of the meditation, things appear inherently, but there's no adherence or no grasping at inherent existence. You see that? So that means a bodhisattva, an Arya bodhisattva, doesn't create new throwing karma with the 12 links, because this first link is not really present. You see that? Yeah, so that's why the scriptures say that in Arya Bodhisattva, there's no new karma being created anymore. It's just going in the washing machine of purifying the negative karmas with realizing emptiness, right? Yeah, all the stains you wash away. Yeah. So that means that the Buddha said, if there's no ignorance, there's no karmic formation. If there's no karmic formation, there's no seeds planted in consciousness that propels or gets activated later on, right? So in that sequence, the Buddha explained that. But also, from other points of view of practice, you know, if there's no contact, there's no feeling, right? Also, those things have been explained by the Buddha. And also that even if there's contact and there's feeling, then if there's the mindfulness awareness of not, you know, acting out of attachment with things you like, or aversion with things you dislike, if that process doesn't happen, then also you prevent the mind from generating afflictions in relation with the objects, right? So that also prevents a particular karma from being created. So that's why there's a lot of emphasis in certain aspects of the teaching, just being aware of what's happening. Okay, there's a feeling, but then don't act, right? And act in a way, okay, pleasure, okay, attachment comes, or displeasure, aversion comes. You see that? Yeah, so that's also aspects the Buddha talked about, yeah? So that means if one link, the previous link is not present, the next link won't come into being, right? If there's no craving, there's no grasping. Yeah, because it's cause and effect relationships. You see that? Yeah. So from that point of view, you can also understand, if there's no craving, if you put antidotes to its craving and grasping, then previous negative karma created cannot come to ripening. You see that? Which is also very important issue. As long as you don't have direct perception of emptiness, then still you have to act in a particular way to make sure you go the right direction, right? So that means then also you apply the antidotes to the afflictions. Because if you apply the antidotes to the afflictions, you prevent this karma from getting ripened, right? Especially negative karma, which needs a kind of negative states of mind, right? So that means if you generate, you don't have realized emptiness yet, but you can generate positive states of mind, then at the time of death, that will happen you to activate positive karma, and you can be born again, and then you move slowly up the ladder. You see that? Yeah, so that's also explained in this particular sutra. You know, if one, the previous is missing, then the next one come into being, right? So that's also a kind of explanation being given by the Buddha. So that means, if you purify negative karma created in the past, you apply the antidotes to the afflictions, you see that? Then also you prevent these kind of heavy negative karmas from coming into being that propels you in a particular lifetime. Yeah, so that many methods we can use to prevent this. Is us? No. It's a car, right? It's a car. Last time I thought it was a car, but then it was the room below me. So if the previous one is not present, then the next one comes into being. That's also how the Buddha explained. Yeah, so this has many levels. The most profound level is realizing emptiness. Yeah, sometimes it gets a bit busy. So the most profound one is, of course, realizing emptiness. You get rid of ignorance. As long as you don't have realization of emptiness, then you try to play with the other kind of things, right? So apply the antidotes to the afflictions, which prevents the craving and grasping of negative karma, right, from coming into being, right? So there's many methods you can apply. Yeah, so that means you have to, actually work on those different levels to shape our future, because it's in our hands, right? It's not, the past is past, the future is coming. Right, so we prepare for that. Yeah, so for that purpose, we don't like suffering and we like happiness. So we can act in that way. You know, that's what the Tibetans say, Tendel Drik. We can organize this law of causality. We can organize dependent origination for the future. So that's how we can act. You know, in preventing one link from coming into being and prevents the next from being propelled. Right. So that's another way of how to deal with the 12 links. And that's when we talk about the true paths and the true cessation, of course, the true cessation is the absence of suffering or the absence of an affliction, right? Yeah. So that is being created by the true paths. And the true paths are direct perception of emptiness. Yeah. So why are they be considered true paths? Because we talked about contaminated activities and non-contaminated activities. As long as things are contaminated, it's a cause for samsara, we saw, right? Yeah. So an Arya Bodhisattva, when he realizes emptiness directly, is a non-contaminated state of mind. You see that? So that's the first step out of samsara. You see that? So that's why this realizing of emptiness is so important. Yeah, that's what Arya Deva says. If you have just a mere, in the 400 verses, if you have the mere doubt tending towards the factual with regard to emptiness, that's going to shake samsara. So if you think, that means that if you think, oh, the eye, how does it appear? Concrete from its own side. Does it exist that way or does it not exist that way? Probably it does not exist that way. There's just a doubt, right? That's shaking up samsara. That's what Arya Deva says. Meaning, that's going to slowly start to lose this grasping as we have in ignorance, you know? Because if we understand dependent origination and we understand we don't exist that concrete from its own side, then this ignorance will lose its potential. Yeah, of course, it's still present in a kind of, always in kind of dormant manner. Yeah, sometimes when reflections come up, it becomes very manifest. But the more you understand emptiness, the more you see how to cut this kind of ignorance, right? So that's why, that's very important. Yeah, so that to summarize, so that's kind of the different types of karma we discussed. Why did we talk about karma? Because we have to know how to achieve happiness in the future. Yeah, so we talked about the four aspects of karma, right? That karma is definite, the aspect of increase, then the aspect of experience, cannot experience things created by another continuity of consciousness, and that the results will come, or said the karma, it doesn't get exhausted until it's either purified with negative karma or destroyed with positive karma. If not, then the results will come, right? So there's no, the karma actually gets exhausted when the results come into being. So that means when you get sick, there's a ripening effect of negative karma, right? So that means if you're sick anyway, then you can just be sick, but you can also think, oh, great, I'm sick. Now I'm purifying negative karma, right? Then it's a very positive thing to be sick. But if you're sick and you think, oh, I'm sick, I want to get better, but you don't get better, then you don't accomplish your wish and you're still sick. So if you think in a constructive way, that sickness becomes kind of, not nice, but it becomes a kind of, you know, much easier to deal with. You know? So that's why, when I said this research, when they asked His Holiness that, why do the Tibetans, or majority of the Tibetans, who spend so many years in torture in prison, why don't it have, what's the reason they don't have this post-traumatic stress disorder, you know? Then one of the answers of His Holiness is because they understand law of cause and effect, you know? So they understand that being in prison, being tortured, they created a cause for that in the past. That's one aspect. Or the other aspect is, there's one aspect of taking difficulties into the part, you know, when you're sick or mentally difficult, then you just think, oh, great, ripening negative karma. You know, if you think in that way, because if it ripens in a sickness, it's much better than when it ripens being born as Dorje the cat, right? Dorje the cat is quite lucky because he's, you know, in a Buddhist center, but there's many other animals who are not in a Buddhist center, right? So then it's better to have a sickness than to be born in that state, because then it's very difficult to get out of it, you know? So that's one aspect. Another aspect is, if you think you're sick, and you think, okay, may I, by experience this sickness, take the suffering of all sentient beings without exception? You know, they take bodhicitta and tonglen, you know, act of giving and taking into the path. And that is not only purifying or exhausting negative karma, becomes an incredible purification tool. Because you actually have some suffering, you take the suffering of others upon yourself in that regard. So you purify not only negative karma that is the cause of this sickness, but you also purify, by this intention, taking the suffering of others, of other negative karma created in the past in relation to others. You see that? So then this Tonglen practice of taking the suffering of others becomes an incredibly powerful tool to purify negative deeds. You know? Very powerful. And then the mind is like, then if you train like that, so for us we always say, oh yeah, Tonglen, let's do Tonglen. But then when we're really sick, then we don't think like that. We think, oh, I want to get better. So if you really try to put Tonglen when you're sick, and you can't do that whenever it's difficult, you know, then in the future you have this habituation pattern. It doesn't matter whatever difficulty you always remember this, you know, and then it becomes very powerful. You know? So that's a purification of not only that the karma gets exhausted, but you purify all the negative karma in relation you create with others. Because now you take the suffering of others upon yourself, right? So there's many stories about, even one famous story Lama Zopa Rinpoche always talks about, a person who got cured from HIV, it was many years ago before they got on, now they have all kind of medication, but it was way before that. So then he had HIV, and then he went to his teacher, Ratkyong Lama Rinpoche, a very, very precious teacher. So then he advised him to do Tonglen, and he did Tonglen. And then a few weeks later, he went to the hospital again, and they couldn't find the virus anymore. And the doctor said, oh, probably you made a mistake before, because they didn't understand something like that was possible. But it doesn't mean that whatever sickness you have, Tonglen will solve the problem. But if the karma is there, because it's very complex, right? If it's possible to get cured, then you can do that, right? So this person. And then Rinpoche asked, Lamsubha Rinpoche asked, you must meditate like day and night, for this week. But actually he didn't, he said. But he, when he was meditating, very intense, he said, so much compassion. So much compassion. He was crying out of compassion for all sentient beings. And then did a Tonglen. And then it's very powerful, you know. So that means that you not only exhaust negative karma by experiencing sickness, which is positive by itself, but also if you do Tonglen on top of that, then it becomes an incredible, powerful tool to purify not only that result, yeah, or the cause of that for that reason to come about, but also other potentials in your mind that can cause suffering in the future, which is created in relation to others, because now you take the suffering of others upon yourself. You see that? That's the power of reliance. No, we talked about the four opponent powers of purification, right? So the power of reliance, and then you take the other four, the other remaining powers also present. Yeah, the power of regret, the power of taking refuge for Buddhists, and then this bodhicitta, you know, is one of the most powerful ones, the power of reliance, because every negative karma you have created in relation to others, and now you take the suffering of others upon yourself, and then of course you have this kind of the actual, at that time the antidote is the Tonglen, right? And then you have the power of resolve not to engage in negative actions in the future. So together, Tonglen, when you're sick, together with these four opponent powers, becomes a very kind of very powerful practice to purify negative deeds, you know. So that's another aspect, because if you understand the 12 links, you understand all sentient beings are, by the power of ignorance, they create this kind of continuous kind of birth, aging, sickness, death, and this, in this cycle, and then you have some problem, then you take that from others, suffering together with the causes, and then becomes extremely powerful kind of psychology, kind of, you know, not only psychology, but actually the law of cause and effect, you know, that you purify negative deeds like a fairy. So it's not only you have to realize emptiness in order to, eventually you have to, in order to get rid of ignorance, right? You have to realize emptiness, otherwise you cannot get rid of the seeds. Yeah, so we saw with purification, a person who hasn't direct perception of emptiness with his four opponent powers can purify the potentials for the reason to come about. For example, you have created a negative throwing karma or certain negative throwing karmas. So the potential that has been created in the first three links, right? Yeah, that sits there. Then you do purification. So then that karma that's been created doesn't have the potential anymore to goes to the link of becoming, right? That potential gets purified in the purification practice. Yeah, but the seed, as we saw, the seed is still there. So the seed has been taken away with direct perception of emptiness. You see that? So you need both kind of practices to move on in that direction of liberation and enlightenment. Yeah, yeah. So that's basically all the material. We did quite a bit, you know. Huh? Too much? No? No? Okay. Because we do this in 2 months, what I did yesterday and today. So it's kind of a quick summary, you know? Yeah, normally we study for 2 months. Yeah, anyway, so at least we get a little bit idea of what the 12 links are all about. Yeah, so from the point of view of Buddha's first teaching, the Four Noble Truths, yeah, so, and the 12 links were one of the first and most important teachings of the Buddha, right? So it's good and important to understand. Yeah, so first and important teachings in all the traditions of Buddhism, right? So that means Theravada tradition, in our tradition, right? In the Chinese traditions. Four Noble Truths and the 12 links of dependent originations are fundamental teachings, right? So it's very important to get a good understanding of that. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the 12 links, more or less. So if any questions still or some debate, then I'm open.
I'm quite curious about like the second ring, like with the different realms. Mm. Can you briefly say something about that, maybe?
Which realm?
Well, all of them, literally. Like,
Ale, you know, all of them.
Yeah,
all
like
six.
How they relate to you know what you talked about today, maybe.
Ale, so we talked about yesterday, basically, that by the power of the afflictions, right, and ignorance and attachment And aversion, we create either positive or negative karma. So we go either up or we go down, right? By the 12 links. Yeah, so negative karma, so the 12 links of dependent origination explain the cycle of rebirth, right? So it's a kind of a global understanding of how we are born in samsara. Those other aspects we talked about today are different aspects of individual lives. Yeah, how karma actually propels a particular suffering or happiness. But the 12 links explain how we are born in our lower states of rebirth, like animal realm, spirit realm, or hell realms. Yeah? The animal realm, we know they exist. The spirits and the hell realms, we don't see them. But if we don't see them, doesn't mean, you know, you can't see them, so they don't exist, right? So that's, anyway, that's something to think about yourself. But another thing to think about is that we discussed also yesterday, if the possibility is there for consciousness to move from one particular realm to another, right? So meaning from a human birth, at time of death, consciousness left, body leaves, goes behind, and consciousness is only left, right? So can that be born in a state of a Dodgy the cat, you know, or another kind of animal or something like that? So then we also talked about that they have, their consciousness is very similar. Afflictions, emotions, positive as well as negative, very similar. You know, so that's a possibility of, you know, it doesn't pervade always to be always human, right? Yeah, anyway, there's a few things to think about. And then there's a possibility also to be born in higher states of rebirth, like a god, or human, or a god, right? So to be born as a god, if you practice a lot of concentration meditation and you cut off sense perception of the desire realm, like the humans have, right? So you can think, if you get more attached to this kind of quietness of mind, that the mind is like peaceful and bliss, no sense perception, right? Only the more subtle form of mind of concentration. Then you can imagine that you think, oh, that's nice. I like to stay always in this state, right? So that actually causes, because of that wish, that's a wish, right? A prayer doesn't mean we have to fold our hands together, you know? If you just think, oh, that's nice. I like to stay in this state forever. It's also a prayer, right? So then you cause to be born, can be caused to be born in one of the god realms. You know, so it's a very nice place, you know. We don't have this coarse body, yeah, because for us it's very difficult to understand to be born in those states because we so think that we are our body, right? But the more you think, do some meditation, get a little bit of an idea of the mind, then you can see that it's a mind and there's a body, and then the attachment to the body maybe becomes a little bit less, right? So for us, it's very difficult to understand that because we so identify us with the body, right? So we also talked about that the possibility of that the consciousness leaves the body at time of death, right? So and then takes birth in either of the states. Yeah. So by depending on these 12 links, because same thing, you know, you have this ignorance of grasping at a concrete consciousness which is very blissful, right? So you'd like to always stay in that state that creates a karmic imprint in your consciousness. At the time of death, you remember this. Oh, wow, that state is amazing. You know, the grasping and craving comes. And then you propel to your next life in one of the god realms, right? Because that's very similar as consciousness. It's a wish, you know? So then when I talked about the crow in our garden in Serra, where we were helping him when he was dying, then just before he died, he looked up to the other crows in the sky. We were like, wah, wah, wah. Then he looked up, and then he died. So then it's like he created a cause again, you know, maybe to born there, because the habituation patterns are so strong, you know? So that you can see how habituation patterns at a time of... But luckily, I said, we took them many times around stupa, you know, with many very holy relics in there. So maybe next life he is not crow again, but then after that maybe, you know, ripens. So that means that at the time of death is very crucial. What is the state of consciousness, right? So if there's an inclination or attachment to a particular realm, then there's a propelling kind of potential is there anyway, so that gets activated, right? You see that? So that's in very short kind of easy way what actually those 12 links are all about. Yeah, makes sense or not? Yeah? So that also means that grasping and craving at the time of death, so what our mind is at the time of death is very crucial. So that's why we always emphasize to generate positive states of mind at time of death. Yeah? And also when the person died and the consciousness actually left the body, when the conscience is still there, it's very important to do prayers near the person. If the person is Buddhist and you are Buddhist, right? Or you try to enhance any other state of positive state of mind. If that person is a Christian, you try to enhance things from the Christian background, right? Yeah, so you try to do that. And then when a person goes into the bardo, right, then also it's important to do prayers. Because the bardo being, basically, is very sensitive. Bardo being has clairvoyance, and if a bardo being sees that something positive is done for him or her, it generates also some positive state of mind in the bardo being, right? So that also can help to certain interpretations of the next rebirth. Yeah, so certain interpretations say it's fixed, but yeah, this by the powerful prayers or powerful rituals, there's still a possibility for concentration of the Lama to redirect that kind of bardo being in a particular positive direction. Yeah, so that's why also that's always been advised. If people pass away, then for every 7 days or something, we do a particular puja, or, up to 7 times 7. So that's the 12 links in a nutshell. Anything else or
Geshe, I have a question about this, because I, on the beginningless mind, beginningless consciousness, and beginningless can be very long.
Yeah, even longer than that.
Yes.
Yeah.
And the six realms,
yeah,
if you go back very long, a few billion years.
Oh, also beginningless.
Yes, yeah. But then these realms, like animal realms and human realms, didn't exist. Our Earth didn't exist.
Yeah, that's true.
What does the teaching say about that?
There's other places in the universe where we have something similar, right?
And does it mean that if we die, then we do not necessarily born
on this planet?
On this planet,
no, doesn't have to. No, because if you have all kind of karmic connections or habituation patterns in another planet somewhere in the universe where you lived like a long time in previous lifetimes, then at time of death it can propel that karma. And the bardo being, there's no distance for bardo being, right? The bardo being moves even faster than the speed of light. Then you think, oh, can you go back in time? But that means the bardo being, I don't know about the theory, but if you, a bardo being, you move according to the speed of your thoughts. And there's no obstructions, right? You go straight through the earth, you don't, there's no obstruction. It's not like a coarse body like we have, you know? So that means that at a time of death, if some karma gets activated somewhere else in the universe, planet, with similar form of life, right? There's no reason why not. In our Milky Way, maybe, I don't know. But, there's many other possibilities. And not only that, for the desire realm, we need this kind of, particular climate, and the conditions we have on Earth is also, if you really look at the statistics and the possibility, if you look at the probabilities of getting this kind of temperature over such a long period of time, with all the conditions for life, is almost impossible. If you really study from the Big Bang to the development of the Earth, to have these conditions we have now, is, if you look at the statistics, it's like a few hundred factors that plays a role in getting these right conditions. It's almost kind of impossible, right? So there's a lot of kind of debate among scientists that maybe there's something else than just a material kind of, process, right? So that's, anyway, to put that aside. So that means there's also other possibilities in other places, right?
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, it's because the universe is infinite, so planets with life is also infinite, right? Yeah. That's it for today. Then try to, dedicate for the benefit of all sentient beings and to eliminate all suffering, right? So try to dedicate in that direction. When that's the mind of enlightenment for oneself and all others may be generated and never decrease, but increase more and more. Janju Samjo Rinpo Che Magye Panang Gyu Chik Kyeba Nyamba Meba Yang Kone Gonde Beba Sho. And then without emptiness, we cannot eliminate ignorance. So oneself and all sentient beings generate this mind realizing emptiness. And then emptiness itself is empty of ignorant existence. And we are empty of ignorant existence, and the dedication is also empty of ignorant existence. So we'll think like that. Toni tawa rinpoche magye panangye gyuchi kyeba nyamba meva yangone gonde beba isho. And all the precious gurus who teach the true paths to enlightenment, like His Holiness Dalai Lama, Lama Zobo Rinpoche, also may they have long and healthy life and lead us in our future lifetimes as quickly as possible to the stages of enlightenment. Kare rabe korbe singan so bendan dewa malu jongwe ni shenre zigwan tenzin gyatso yi shape zite baru tenkyo. Okay, thank you very much.
So, thank you everyone. There's no need to tidy the room up today. It can stay like this till tomorrow. So, thank you everyone.